everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and be blessed wherever you are. Yes, we are going to be talking about amazing blessings here from the land of Israel, and you are energized. You're going to be energized through it because we have an incredible Torah portion, and I'm by myself. On the one hand, I'm a little bit like, where's Rabbi Mike? Where's Malka? On the other hand, you know, I'm feeling good. It's been an intense few weeks, and I have a chance to kind of sit down with you a little bit. It's morning here in beautiful Judea, and we're on the Land of Israel Network, and I have a chance to discuss with you something that I have a deep love and connection to, and that is the beginning especially. We'll talk about the rest, but we'll start with the beginning of the Torah portion of Vayetze, which is chapter 28. Verse 10 of the book of Bereshit, book of Genesis. And we're going to, like, this is one of the apex moments of Genesis. This is one of the kind of key, I don't know how to even say it. It's just one of these dramatic moments. And you can see it also in the amount of commentary that's around it. And we're going to talk about, of course, the dream of the ladder, of seeing the angels going up and down, and Jacob's kind of sojourn towards leaving the land of Israel and the promise to come back. We'll get to that in just a second. I do want to tell you that there's some good news on the offing, and that is some rain is coming, which is so great because we haven't had any rain here in the land of Israel. And I was thinking to myself that we don't have a government and we don't have any rain. And I was just like making that connection to myself in my head. Just today, I was thinking to myself, the sun is blue, the sky is blue, the sun is out. And things aren't kind of progressing forward weather-wise. And it's the same thing with the fact that we don't have a government and there's no flow. And there's no, you know, and the money, you know, the government, what's government really about? Government's about money, right? Sending the money that they've taken from you and sending it to other places. Whatever, we're not going to get into the tension between socialism and libertarianism and the spectrum in between. I'm not getting into that. I'm just getting into the fact that I was at the Knesset yesterday, and I'm taking this fabulous course run by Adi Arbel as part of the Civil Society for Israel, which is part of the Kohelet Policy Forum, which is teaching people like myself how to have a better contact with the Knesset, better, how should we say, smoother operation with the Knesset, both from a funding point of view, but also just to get laws passed and different things. In fact, I'm very excited. Next week, we're going to actually start the more practical element of the course where we actually have to submit what we'd like to see happen through the Knesset and with the group work on it. In any case, we were actually in the physical Knesset yesterday. That's Israel's parliament, Israel's governing body. And lots of secrets, lots of interesting things I learned along the way yesterday. It was really neat. But everybody was complaining that there's kind of like no, now you have to understand it's a little bit weird here in Israel. There is a Knesset. It's still operating and discussing. There are ministers, but there is no coalition, no ruling coalition. Therefore, there's a lot of budgets that aren't being passed and monies that aren't flowing, all kinds of stuff. And so everybody's kind of in a waiting period, and the Knesset is like a little bit sad there, just a tad. And I thought to myself, there's no rain and there's no Knesset either. And then I thought to myself, actually, I didn't think that was the end of the thought. The thought was, I'm disappointed because there's no government and there's no rain. But on the other hand, I thought to myself, there's no government, but the process of the Jewish people returning to the land of Israel is still moving forward. Things are being built. People are having babies. You know, kids are going to school. Life is still happening. So I thought to myself, well, there's no government, but you know what? It still moves forward. And there's no rain, but maybe there'll be a lot of rain later, and it's a beautiful sunny day, and that's also something good, right? It's good to be alive in the land of Israel. But then this morning, I heard that the rain was actually coming, and I thought to myself, Baruch Hashem, the rain's coming, you know what? And maybe good news is coming for the government of Israel as well. You know, let's pray for all these things. Let's pray. And do you see the connection? Like, there's, when we say, the Jewish people, when we say Mazel Tov, right? You've heard that. Mazel Tov, right? What does that mean? It means good luck, ostensibly. But the Kabbalists explain that the word mazal, which means, you know, your star, your luck, all that business, comes from another word, which is to mean, that means flow, lizol. So, you know, we need good flow, you know, and that's, you know, there's a book written about that flow. That's the zone that, you know, NBA players, you know, get into when they're really in the zone. They got flow. They got, it's just kind of coming out. It's flowing out. So I want to bless all of you guys with good flow, you know, in everything, in parenting and business and being a spouse and being a human being in this world, being a servant of God. Good flow, good sense of hatzlacha, of success. And I want us all to turn that blessing right around and bless the land of Israel and the governing body of the Jewish people in the land of Israel is the state of Israel. That's the sovereign. And let's bless all of those. You could bless them together or independently. There's nothing to get like too stuck on. You know, you don't love the state of Israel as it is. I love it. Even if with its imperfections, I just see that this is the gift that God has given us. And we've got to really, you know, maximize it. And move it forward. That doesn't mean that it may need changes. It certainly needs changes for sure, and it needs to become more in line with the greatest gift that we ever got as a people, which is the Torah. No question about it that it needs changes. And maybe these are earthquakes. These elections. We are probably going to third elections. But I thought to myself, just as there's news that we're probably going to third elections, so too there's news that rain is coming. And I thought to myself, you know what? Let it rain. Let it rain and let us keep moving forward. Thing is about life is that it's a little bit like a slalom course / Tetris. Things are coming down fast. We live in a time where things are coming down fast. Tetris is a good example. It's like things are coming down fast from heaven and you got to just order them as best as possible and see if you can, you know, stack them right. And when you stack them right, things kind of go below and you keep building and you keep doing what you got to do and you kind of just got to kind of fold away the blessings that you're getting and you know, don't let it get too chunked up, don't let it get too messed up, you know, keep it orderly. That's the gifts of God, and at this time he's decided, for whatever his reasons are, capital H, whatever his reasons are, that this is a time of great blessings. So let's really prepare ourselves to receive those blessings, and when we get blessings, whatever they are, and sometimes they're disguised as non-blessings, but they're still blessings, let us thank God and also, you know, prepare ourselves to order the stuff and move the project forward as best as we can in our life. And really, that's the best thing that they could say about us when we pass away, that we we're part of this great project. We help move it forward one way or another. And the archetype kind of hero for the Jewish people is Jacob. All the three forefathers have got their energy that they bring to the world. And Jacob has his very particular energy. And in some ways, there's an interesting tension between who's the most chosen of the forefathers. It's either Abraham or Jacob. Isaac, his greatness is that he was kind of chosen almost from birth, his miraculous birth, and then the binding. And so in some way, he's like a perfect, like you don't touch him. He's like, there's something about him that's like perfect and almost above human, just a tad. And also, at the same time, while he's a bit untouchable in his perfection, he's also a transition element. He's supposed to transition between, and we talked about it last week, between Abraham and Jacob. But Abraham, his great gift to this world is that he was the first, and that he recognized God and discovered God by himself. And that will never, that zchut, that merit will never be forgotten. The genius, the hugeness of Abraham, a pillar of this world. Yet he's got Ishmael and Isaac as children, and there's a certain amount of imperfection in that. Jacob, on the other hand, he is a kind of middle ground between the chesed of Abraham, the characteristic trait of kindness, and the polar opposite of that, which is Isaac's yira, his like fear, his awe of God. So you have the love of God and you have the awe of God. Abraham is love. Isaac is awe, right? So like Jacob is somewhere in the middle. He's called Tiferet. He's like in the middle between, he's somehow a hybrid or a middle ground between these two characteristic traits. And all of his children, his 12 sons, are going to be the inheritors of the Abrahamic way. And therefore, there's something about Yaakov, which he's called the Bechir Ha'avot. He is the chosen, the most chosen of the forefathers. All right, there's a lot of Kabbalah on this, on these topics. And our show, our podcast, is really about trying to kind of, you know, grip as much as possible on a certain amount of surface level of what's going on in the text of the Torah portion, and also life lessons about how we could take it forward. So so we're not going to delve into super Kabbalah, but what I do want to say is that let us remember what happened last week. And this now this is a bit of Yishai's take on the situation. And I like to kind of humanize and put it into a kind of story context and look at the picture. And here's what I'm getting at. You have Jacob, his mother says to him, you got to go and trick your father and get this blessing. And he says, I'm going to get a curse. She says, your curse is upon me. Okay, so I trust Rebecca. She's awesome. She never falters. Well, let's do what she says. When he gets the blessing, the whole thing worked, the food worked, the goat skin on the arms worked, great. He comes out, his mom says to him, oh boy, you got to go. You got to run, rabbit. Why is that? Well, your brother wants to kill you. Okay, so I got to say goodbye to my mom, my father, the tents that I'm a tent dweller in, the soups that I know how to make. I got to leave all that and get out of here to do two things. One, to save my neck from Esav, my brother, and also to find a wife to continue the family way so I don't marry a Canaanite girl. But like, so I've come out of this room and now I'm cast off. Now I'm running away. And the Medrash keeps going and takes it to another level. The Medrash says that Jacob also was on the run, and Esav indeed wanted to kill him. He sent his son to murder him. Well, the son runs, Esav's son runs after him, and the son's name is Eliphaz. So this Eliphaz is running after, he's Esav's son, and he's running after Jacob. And he catches up with him, and Jacob says to him, what are you going to kill your own family member? And he says, well, I promised my dad I would. So he goes, you know what? This is a great Jewish kind of Talmudic workaround, legal loophole. He says, take all my money. And if you make me poor, being poor is likened to being dead. So he says, okay. So he takes all his money, and Jacob is therefore quote unquote killed. But the bottom line is that he ends up being impoverished, destitute. He's a bum. He's got nothing. He's a deadbeat. He doesn't have a penny on him, right? And so this is where Jacob finds himself on a hilltop in the what we call today the Benjamin region, in the town that we call Beit El. We'll get to that in a second, where it is exactly. And he finds himself on a hilltop. The sun is setting, and he's got nothing. He's got nothing on him. He doesn't have a shekel or a drachma or whatever it was. Drachma is way later. That's like 2,000 years later. But like, no, 1,500 years later. But he doesn't have a penny to his name. Okay, he doesn't have a shekel to his name. He doesn't have any of the tents because we were told that he's a tent dweller. So he's got nothing. And he's on this hilltop, and the sun is setting, and it's cold, and there's animals out there. Now, I lived, this is a very important part of why I'm spending so much time on this, because I lived in Beit El for 7 years, and I know that hilltop. I know that area. And I'll tell you something. There are wild pigs there, boars, and other animals. So he doesn't have a cushy pillow. He's got to put rocks around his head or under his head, different understandings. But that's what he's sleeping on. He's sleeping on a barren hilltop with rocks to cover his head. No blankie. And what is he thinking to himself at that moment? I was right. I was cursed. Everything that I know is gone. My beloved mother, gone. My father, gone. My life, gone. My tents are gone. There's no warm soup and there's no warm blanket. And I'm out here on my own. I have been exiled from all that is good and holy in this world, from all that I know that protects me. I am completely alone. And the whole thing, it went kablooey. The whole thing was a train wreck. So I am utterly broken and alone. My brother hates me. My father probably doubts me. My mom told me to get out. I've got nothing in this world. I have been cursed. I am alone. And that is the backdrop to the story. So it says, so let's read the verse. It says, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva vayelech Harana. So Yaakov went, he left Be'er Sheva, and he started heading towards southern Turkey. And it says, and then the Medrash says that he actually, and my good friend Zev Orenstein mentioned this to me, reminded me about this. It says that during actually his Simcha this week, it said that he went all the way to almost to Haran. He remembered that he forgot to pray in the place where his father and his grandfather had that very special moment, the Akedah. He forgot to stop in Jerusalem. So he starts heading back. He actually heads back just to pray, just to stop and pray. And anyway, as I said, he's totally alone. He's totally poor. He's totally broken. And it says, Vayifga b'makom. He encountered the place, or he hit the place. And he spent the night there, Vayalan Sham, and he had to go to sleep. Why? Kiba Shemesh, because the sun set. And my friend Zev, who I mentioned a second ago, also reminded me to listen to this week's OU Shnai Mikra podcast, which I recommend often to you guys. And this week, it was Menachem Liebtag, and he talks about how this is very similar. This whole story here that we're going to encounter today is similar to the covenant between the parts, with some important differences. But in any case, also in the covenant between the parts, so too did Abraham have to go to kind of fall asleep because the sun had been forcibly set by God. And it says here, Veikach me'avnei ha'makom, that Jacob took from the rocks, plural, remember that, of the place, and Vayasa mirashotav, and he put it around his head. Veishkav b'makom ahu, and he laid in that place. Now, the word makom is oftentimes the makom is Jerusalem. Little problem here that I want to get to very quickly. Are we talking about Jerusalem or Beit El? They are two different places. And they always, throughout the whole Tanakh, they are two different places. Well, wait a minute. What does Beit El mean? It means the house of God. So the house of God is only in Jerusalem, right? But the town of Beit El, where it exists today, was also, in the times of the Tanakh, was also a separate town than Jerusalem. The commentators struggle about where we're talking about. And Rashi, I think, has a very, you know, both a very interesting and very meaningful comment, which not everybody agrees with, but I like very much. And he says, look, and I tell this to people all the time, the Temple Mount, it's got what we call in Judaism, spilkes. It's got ants in its pants. It is not it's not always just hanging out in one place, the Temple Mount. Basically, it went to three different places throughout Jewish history. Once it jumped, the Temple Mount jumped to Mount Sinai, so it could be part of the giving over of the Torah. And once, later on, it jumped towards Mount Carmel and became part of Mount Carmel in order to have the fire come down when Elijah beckoned it to come down for God to receive the offerings. But here, when Jacob comes to Beit El, then the Temple Mount jumps to him just a few kilometers north of Jerusalem to the town of Beth El, the town of Beit El. But what for? What do you need? What do you need? If you're already walking all the way back to Jerusalem, why not just go all the way to Jerusalem, to that very place? Why go to Beit El? And I think that I was privileged in my life to hear an amazing answer. And one of the experts about Beit El is an amazing gentleman, a professor by the name of Chagi Ben Arzi. He's actually the brother of Sarah Netanyahu. In any case, Chagi Ben Arzi, and he said, I asked him this very question, and he says to me, look around here in Beit El. What do you have here in Beit El? You have the ability to see north, south, east, and west. And we'll get to that in a minute, this verse that says, look, north, south, east, and west. You're going to expand greatly north, south, east, and west. It's a place where you can visualize the whole land of Israel. From where I used to live in Beit El, you could see all the way to Gaza and the Mediterranean, all the way to the Hermon, all the way to the Jordan Valley, and all the way to the Hebron Hills and beyond. You could see really, really far. And so Jacob came all the way, walked to Jerusalem. Jerusalem came to him, but it met him at a place where he could understand and receive the blessings of the whole land of Israel. That was a wonderful explanation that I appreciated. In any case, so he puts these rocks, this destitute and poor Jacob, who's broken, has left his family, has got nothing, and he lies down in that place. Bamakom, in that place, the place, that temple mount that came to Beit El. Vayachalom, and he dreamt. Vihine sulam mutzav arza, verosho magia shamaima. Here he sees a ladder it's placed on the earth, but its head reaches the sky. Now, folks, if you need a meditation in this world, if there's one thing that we can meditate on, if there's one thing that God wants from us, is to have our feet on the ground and our head in the sky. That's what God wants. Our feet on the ground and head in the sky. If I could bless you with anything, is to have your feet on the ground and your head in the sky. Meaning, be grounded in this world, know how to work it, and have, at the same time, your head, your thoughts, your beliefs, your heart, your prayers in the heavens. And if you think about it, we talked about it last week as well. When did I say this exact same idea? When I mentioned that the hands are the hands of Esav, but the voice is the voice of Jacob. What does that mean? The hands, this worldly stuff, you got to have this worldly stuff. You got to have the ability to be hands of Esau. Get it done, this world. But you have to have the voice of Jacob, which is your prayers, your thoughts, your higher consciousness has got to be like Jacob. So here again, that theme is reintroduced, which is you got to have, that's the whole dream. That's the dream, folks. The dream is have your feet on the ground and your head in the sky. But that's not the end of the dream. Okay. It says vihine and behold, malachei Elohim olim ve'yordim bo. The angels of God are going up and down upon it. Right? So what is that? What does that mean? That there's angels going up and down? It means this is a connection point. By the way, it's a connection point between heaven and earth, but that does not mean that God sends his angels down, that he commands everything, and that this world has no feedback. That's the Islamic idea, right? Which is like God says and you do. Meaning to say, if Muhammad would have this dream, then it would be, and the angels of God are coming down in this world. And if it would be a secularist type dream, it would be God is detached from this world, and the angels are only going up. You know, we are the creators of this world. Our thoughts is what controls, and we're the center of this world. The angels emanate from us, whatever they are, and we're the masters of this world. But what the story is that Jacob saw a ladder and angels of God are going up at Olim Vyordimbo. Just that concept, Olim Vyordimbo. That God sends his, of course, God is the creator, but at the same time, we give him feedback. And we're part of the creative process of building with him together. That's an amazing thing, that we're sending angels back towards God as well. That's the way I understand it. Right, that our prayers, our dreams, our thoughts are part of shaping this world, and we're in an interchange with God. We're in a discourse with God, a dialectic. I'm using all the fancy words of dialectic. They love those words. That's like you use that word in conversation amongst certain groups, and you're in. Okay, just say dialectic. We're having a dialectic. Okay, so. So in any case, there's this dialogue between heaven and earth. And that's really the vision that he has. That is the vision. That's his vision. Going on, that there's a ladder and there's angels going up and down. The rest is going to be dialogue, but that's the picture. And if you look in the commentaries, oh my God, what did he only not see? He saw the exiles, and he saw the temples, and he saw everything, everything. The whole story is basically in this ladder between heaven and earth. If you would encapsulate, in many ways, if you would encapsulate the whole vision of the whole shebang, I'm talking about the whole shebang. It's a ladder between heaven and earth, and angels going up and down. That's the only thing that Jacob, the great Jacob, sees. But there's conversation. There's going to be already commentary about it. So here's a commentary directly from the mouth of the proverbial mouth of God himself. V'ine Adonai nitzav alav. God was standing over him. Vayomar, and he said to him, Ani Adonai Elohei Avraham Avicha ve'Elohei Yitzchak. I am the God of your father Abraham, and also the God of Isaac, which is an interesting play there, right? Haaretz, the land, Asherata Shochev Aleha, this land that you are laying upon, this very land that you're laying upon, Lecha Etnena Ulezarecha. Okay? This very land that you're laying upon, I'm going to give to you and your seed, your offspring after you. That's the first message that God says to Jacob. Wait a minute. Jacob's like, wait a minute, I'm getting kicked out of the land. I'm running away. God says, this land that you're laying on, and the Medrash says so beautifully that the whole land of Israel was folded underneath Jacob at that very moment. That is the promise, that's the first line that God says to him. This very land that you're laying on is yours for perpetuity and to your generations. The first part of the phrase is actually, I am the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac, meaning to say they served me, and I've promised them this land. I promise it to you now as well. So you're also going to serve me, and this is the land that I give to you and to your seed. Also, so that's the promises of the land, but also it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be theoretical, because v'haya zarecha ke'afar ha'aretz, your seed is going to be like the dust of the earth. Ufaratzta yama v'kedma v'tzafona v'negba, and you will expand greatly west, east, north, and south. Yama is towards the sea, kedma is the east, tzafona is north, negba is towards the south. And what? Not only that, there's a tripartite promise here. The first part is you'll get the land, and two, you're going to have a lot of kids, and v'nivrachu b'cha kol mishpachot adama uvezarecha, and all the families of the earth are going to be blessed through you and through your seed. So there's right there at the end there, like, you're like, you'll have this land, you'll have a lot of kids, so thanks a lot, God. But no, but you know, doesn't stop with a particular. It becomes universal. The whole world will be blessed through you. That is the promise that God gave Jacob. Do you guys understand? Can I go into parentheses mode? Like, when you read this stuff deeply, you just desperately want to be a Zionist and part of this amazing story. You're like, this is happening. And, you know, like, you can't but be wowed by these words and understand that it's happening in our time. Anyway, let me put it maybe a little bit more dispassionately, which is, people like me, and I think people like you, our whole life is bound up with these words of wanting to be part of this great story. But it doesn't stop there. God also, now it's going to go to the particular about Jacob. V'hine, and behold, Anochi imach, I, God, am with you. U'shmarticha b'chol asher telech, I'm going to protect you in all that you walk. V'shivoticha el adama azot, I will return you to this land. Ki lo azveka, for I will not leave you. Ad asher, until that moment, im asiti, when I shall do, et asher dibarti lach, which I have spoken to you. I will not leave you until that very moment, until I have done which I have spoken to you. Words are a bit convoluted here, just a tad. There's something like beyond these words. Meaning to say, I'm not going to leave. The way I read it in my heart, this is the way I read it, and maybe you'll like it, maybe you don't. I won't stop the story until it's all fulfilled. Then maybe down the line, when it's all fulfilled to completion, then maybe the story of the world will be over. But I will never leave the story of humanity, the story of the earth, the story of the giving of the Torah until it's all done. Okay, so that was the conversation. Remember, the vision is only the ladder and the angels. There's the ladder, then there's the angels, right? So there's a ladder. That's what a human being should be, right? A godly human being, feet on the ground, head in the sky, and then the angels, the connection between heaven and earth. That's the vision. Then the conversation about how it's going to actually play out, which is, I'm going to give you this land, you're going to have children, and they're going to bless the whole world. And then, for you particularly, to make that happen, I'm going to protect you. Now here's the other side of that contract, because it was pretty much, so far, it was God saying, that's what I want. And here's the great, amazing transition or the other side of the contract. And there's a contractual relationship here. And listen what happens. Listen how Jacob takes it. Ve'yikatz Yaakov mishnato, yet Jacob awakens from his sleep, vayomer, and he says, achen yesh Hashem Adonai b'makom hazeh, v'anochi lo yadati. There is God in this place, and I didn't know it. What does that mean, I didn't know it? What does that mean? Didn't you know that God is everywhere? No, I didn't know it. I thought that I was outcast. I thought I was broken. I thought I was alone out there. I thought that this land had rejected me, and that there was no place for me anymore here. And but there's something, not only that, but there's something special about this spot where I got this vision of a ladder between heaven and earth, the very spot. And that's the weird thing. I may have thought that God is here, God is there, God is truly everywhere. I would have thought that there's an equality between godly revelation everywhere, but there's some kind of realization that I didn't know that God is b'makom hazeh, he's in this place, meaning to say this is the place where he's really, really in, which is weird. Why would God be in a chosen specific place? But that's the way it is, and I realize that now, that it's not everywhere. There's something about this very spot, and that's where God's, we'll see in a second, we'll understand it, that's where God's house is. Vayira, he had an awe feeling, he was frightened, Vayomar, and he said, Ma nora hamakom hazeh. How awesome, or even awful, meaning to say how like, the word nora in this case has a double meaning, that it's certainly amazing, but it's not like, yay, so this is where we're going to make Epcot Center, this is where we're going to make Disney World. This place has, there's something amazing about it, but revelation is not a simple thing. This is where you meet God face to face, eyeball to eyeball. And that's not, you know, maybe I'll keep it to face to face, not eyeball to eyeball, because God doesn't have an eyeball, but he does have a face, not a physical face, but there is God's face. God does also have eyes, meaning to say there's these, when I say has eyes, I don't mean to say has physical eyes. I mean to say that God about himself uses these anthropological words to talk about God's eyes, Einei Hashem, by the Lord's eyes. Of course, this is to make us understand these, but in any case, God does see, he does look, but this place is an awesome and sometimes even awful thing to be able to look God face to face, because there's something about that can easily melt us away, because we are a candle, we're not even a candle to his sun. These are just parables, but the point is that we can be swallowed up in his awesomeness. And therefore, there's something scary and amazing about this, the whole thing. But in any case, how awesome is this place? Hamakom, the place. Ein ze, this is none other. Ki im beit Elohim, this is the house of God. Veze shar hashamayim, this is the house of God, and this is the gate of the heavens. We saw nothing, and this Rabbi Menachem Liebtag points out, There's nothing about this. This is that mentions there's a house of God. There was a ladder, and there were angels going up and down. Okay, the second part, Shara Shamayim, the gateway of the heavens. Okay, but where did he get this idea that there's a house of God here? And that is the other side of the contract. It's not that he realizes that there is a house of God here. He realizes that he wants to build a house of God here. He realizes that that is what man gives to God. I'll explain in a second. Let's read the next verse. Vayashkem Yaakov baboker. Jacob awoke in the morning. He got up in the morning. Vikach et ha'evan, he took the singular form stone. Where was the stones? Well, the rabbis jump all over this. The stones united into a stone. Asher samer ashotav, that he put, it became now a pillar that he put under his head or around his head. It became one. But by the way, if it is indeed a kind of circle, a half circle of stones that he put around his head so that animals don't eat it, if it became one, it looks like a gate, right? It looks like a kind of gate. But if it was under his head, then there's 12 different stones, then they became one stone. And Rabbi Liebtag says, a cornerstone for what? For the temple. Right? And the simple knowledge of this in the Jewish tradition is that this is the foundation stone. This is where humanity was born. This is where Abraham almost sacrificed Isaac. This is the foundation stone, and that is today on the very Temple Mount, under the Dome of the Rock. So he took the stone, v'kach ta'evan ashel samer ashotav, which he put under his head, v'yase mota matzeva, and he made it into a pillar, v'yitzok shemen arusha, and he poured oil on its head. And notice, by the way, the word head again, right? There's a rosh, there's a head. Remember that our head was in the sky, but here's the head is now on earth. And he pours oil on this rock. Rabbi Liebtag points out that oil is not something that goes away. You can maybe go 20 years, you come back, maybe there's still a remnant of that oil. In any case, he anoints it. We know what anointing is. Anointing is to make it king-like. Vayikra et shem ha-makom ahu Beit El, and he called that very place Beit El, which means the house of God. The word Beit El is one of the most popular biblical name types that there's out there, right? How many Bethel synagogues and Bethel churches there are in this world? However, it says ve'ulam, and you should know that Luz shem ha'ir l'rishuna, the place had another name first, which is Luz. Now the people of Beit El are very happy that it was changed to Beit El from Luz, because or else the people lived in Beit El would have been called losers. All right, so you don't want that, and so we're all happy that it got changed to Beit El. I can't get into it now, but the word ve'ulam, the word however, appears only four times in the whole Torah, and its meaning is that somebody was able to see something that wasn't quite there, was able to see past. Two times the word ulam is about Jacob, and two times it's about God. But we're not done with the story yet. Ve'idor Yaakov neder. Yaakov made a... He made an oath, right? So Yaakov makes a neder, an oath, saying, "Imi." I'm sorry, I take a chuckle because I remembered something that was said yesterday that I heard on the class yesterday, and I'll repeat it now. It just made me laugh. It's good stuff. Veidor Yaakov neder. So Jacob makes an oath, and he says, "Le'emor im yiyeh Elohim imadi." If God will indeed be with me, but it's not if. When God will be with me, u'shamrani baderech hazeh asher ani olech, and will protect me on this way, baderech hazeh, and this path, this life path, asher ani olech, which I walk, venatan li lechem lechol ubeged li bosh, and he gives me bread to eat and clothes to wear, says my rabbi, Rabbi Tendler, says, why does it say bread to eat and clothes to wear? Isn't that obvious? Don't you need just bread and clothes? Why do you need bread to eat and clothes to wear? And the answer is, Rabbi Tendler, he says, I know a lot of sick people who have bread in their fridge, food in the fridge, but they can't eat it. They have beautiful clothes in their closet, but they can't wear it. Give me not only sustenance, but let me have the ability to actually use it in this world. God bless Rabbi Tendler. And he says, so Jacob says, if you give me bread to eat, clothes to wear, v'shavti b'shalom et beit avi, and I let me return in peace to the house of my father, which eventually he will, v'haya Adonai li l'Elohim, and God shall be for me for a God. Hashem should be for me for God. But it really means in this case that kind of let me walk and serve you throughout my life. Let me be successful in letting me serve you. Like in a sense, one of the things that we can ask God is, help us serve you. Give us strength to serve you. That's what he says here. Like protect me. bring me back to my father's house and give me the strength to serve you. That, and not only that, but I will do something for you, God. This may sound a little surprising, but this is very Abrahamic in that, let's turn it around for a second. Ve'aven azot, he says, this stone, ve'aven azot, this very stone that I poured oil on, asher samti matzeva, which I made into a pillar, yiye beit Elohim, will be a house of God. Ve'kol asher titen li, and all that you give me, aser aserenu lach, I will tithe to you. Everything that you give me, I will tithe to you. So Rabbi Liebtag said something yesterday that just made me chuckle out loud. He says, whenever you're building a synagogue, you know you need three things, right? You need three things. What do you need? You need a rabbi, you need a building, and you need the funds to make it happen, right? So you need the rabbi, the building, and the budget. And I was thinking about calling the show today, the rabbi, the building, and the budget. And if you pay attention here, that's what he says. He says, listen, if you return me to this house, my father's house, if you bring me back to this land and return me to my father's house, then you will be a God for me, meaning to say, I will serve you diligently. I'll be the rabbi. And this stone that I put as a pillar will be a house of God. There'll be a synagogue. And everything you give me, I will give tithe back to you, meaning to say, I will make a budget for the temple. And so you have the rabbi, the servants or the priests, you have the building, and you have the upkeep. And that's what you need to build a synagogue, to build the house of God in this case. But in any case, it's a surprising quid pro quo. That's, I think, the wrong way to look at it. The right way to look at it is, you, God, promised me all these things. What do I ever give you back? Let me build a temple for you. Let my whole purpose in life be to bring God's presence into this earth. Let me create a resting place for you here, a tabernacle, an abode, a dwelling place for your presence. And if you listen to the Hasidic teachings, which I think makes so much sense, which is they ask a simple question: what's the purpose of this world? What's it all about? Like, what is our role in this world? And I think that the Chabad answer is one that is, to me, very compelling. And that is, our job is to make a place for God in this world, to make a dwelling place for God. That's what we're all about. Not about self-actualization. Mistake. That is not the purpose of the world, to self-actualize. Nope. It's to actually actualize God in this world. And we could talk about that a lot. But the point is that what Jacob says is, let me do one thing for you, and that is to build a house for you. And that's really what the Jewish people are saying. Let us build a house for you. There are places, and even sages say that the temple will come down from heaven. And other sages disagree with that. And other sages explain, the other sages, that's not really that the full temple is going to come down en masse and whole, but rather will bring a time into, you know, that God will create the consciousness that will be able to create a temple. Here's the bottom line. When anybody says to you, God will send down the temple, you say to him, but that's our job for him. That's the one thing that we could do back for him. We could grant him. That's the one thing we could build for him. That's the one thing that we could really give God back, right? Which is, no. You don't build a temple. Let us build your temple. Please, let us build a house for you. Like, if you've created this world and you've given us strength, all we're asking is, give us the opportunity to build a house for you, which is very, very different than, you know, he'll build a house for him and we'll kind of like, you know, come in and be happy. No. God, please don't take away from us the merit of having the ability in this world. And that's what Jacob says. Let me build a house for you. You protect me on my path. You give me a chance to come back to this land. You fulfill your promises and I'll fulfill mine, which is, I'll build a house with God for you. And the next verse is very important. Vayisa Yaakov raglav, and Jacob picked up his legs. Vayelech artza b'nei kedem, and he went to the land of the children of the east. Meaning to say, he adroitly, and this I picked up from the Netivot Shalom. He, after God said to him, "No, I'm with you." He picked up his feet and just took off, and was like, "Okay, I'm not cursed. God has revealed himself." Like, we can make this into a very personal story, which is, I thought I was cursed. I'm all destitute. God says, you're not cursed. I'm with you. I'll bring you back to this land. So it's like, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm picking up and I'm going. And here I have to stop and tell a story. And to me, this is a very meaningful story. And it's a story also about Beit El. And it's a very personal story. I don't know if it's so personal. It's just personal to me because I guess I'm the person telling it. Whatever. Let's get to it already, Yishai. Okay. Malka and I were married, and we were considering right after law school to go to Eretz Yisrael, to go to the land of Israel. But I wasn't sure because we had established an Aliyah organization called Kuma in the United States, and it was making inroads. And I thought to myself, if we leave, in one way, we'll really stop actually promoting the land of Israel because this is where it's needed. And I didn't know what to do, and I wasn't sure. Now here's the weird part. I actually got through after my father's death and a phone call that happened between one of the fundraisers in the Beit El institutions to my mother. He was fundraising from her, and he heard that her voice was sad, and he asked what happened, and he said, he heard about my father's death, and he said, what can I do for you? And she said, well, my son needs a job, maybe in the land of Israel. And anyway, crazy stuff, but here's the bottom line. I got a job offer to come work in Arutz Sheva in the Beit El institutions. But Malka and I were not sure whether we should make Aliyah to the land of Israel. Was it the time? Maybe we could have stayed a little bit more. Maybe we could have worked off some of our student debts, etc. So we weren't sure. And I went together with Malka. We went to Rabbi Levi Stolik's house. He was our Chabad rabbi in Crown Heights. And we went to pray. We went for Shabbos. It was Shabbat Shuvah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We went to 770 in Brooklyn. I was really concerned about this issue, and I prayed hard, and I really asked for guidance. And I said to God, listen, I'm here in a place where emissaries are sent. This is a place of shlichut. This is a place where a righteous man sent so many people around the world for their shlichut. I don't know if I'm really supposed to go to Beit El or stay here in America. What should I do? What should I do? What is my shlichut? Anyway, I prayed my little heart out. And then I needed the bathroom, and I wanted to hide my siddur, because finding a good siddur, a prayer book at 770, is not always so easy. So I went down the stairs, and I went halfway, and there's these like vending machines there, and I wanted to put my siddur behind one of these vending machines just to keep it safe and pick it up. And as I'm coming down to the vending machines, I'm thinking about these issues, and I'm about to put my siddur like above the vending machine, and I reach up to put the prayer book above the vending machine, and I looked up, and there was a giant box. Not a giant box, but a big, big box. And it had, in big words, and I'll never even forget the coloration, because it was like in kind of celebratory colors, and looked like kind of a candy color thing. And it said in big words, Beit, in Hebrew, it said Beit El. I'll never forget this. I'll never forget how it looked, Beit El. And it said, and then I saw it, and I couldn't believe it. It was somebody had put the words Beit El on the side of a box. And then I looked closer, and it said Chabad. In little words, it said Chabad, and then the big word Beit El. And then it said in Hebrew, in little words, Pi'ilu Tachat Esh, action under fire. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this is my sign. I asked whether I should go to Beit El. And here's the thing from that very town. From that very town. Somebody, obviously Israeli, had written this thing, and it was the Chabad from Beit El had put this box there, and they were visiting or something. I never found out. And then it said Chabad of Beit El. Yeah, the letters were colored in like a swirl, like a candy cane type of swirl. But and it said, Beit El. And I was like, you know what I felt right there? I felt, this is my sign. This is my sign. And I want you to know that there are times in life where you just don't know. There's many times in life where you just don't know. And then there are times in life when you know. And I knew that this was my sign. And then as I'm telling the story, I remember that feeling, and I know that feeling in my heart till this very day. That was my sign. It said, Beit El. And I knew right there, and I want to tell you, in 3 weeks, Malka and I were living in Beit El, 3 weeks from when we saw that. I had no more doubts. It was just so clear to me that this was my, I wouldn't say sign, it was my directive. And we went out. So, and we packed up our feet, lifted up our legs, and we were out of New York City, and the rest is history, right? And I just want to thank God so much for that clear sign. I want to bless all of you for clarity of knowing what your shlichut is. And there's many times in life when you don't know. There are many, many, many times, and it's rare when you do know. But there are times when you do know, remember them. Those signposts along the way, those are very important. The rest of the Torah portion has many, many important stories, but I'm going to summarize it very quickly because I don't want to go too long today. We're ready at 51 minutes, but I do want to say two more things before we finish off the podcast, the show for today, and that is that Jacob goes, he meets Rachel, he cries when he sees her, he kisses her, and then he goes into the kind of work servitude for Laban for 7 years. He gets tricked. He gets Leah instead of Rachel that he wanted to marry. And then there's a lot. There's so much to talk about here, but I can't do it today. But in any case, he also ends up marrying Rachel. These two wives compete for Jacob's love, and they give birth through them and through the handmaidens to the 11 sons of Jacob. The 12th one is going to be born next week. That's going to be Benjamin, who is going to be born in the land of Israel. Benjamin is where the town of Bethel is. But in any case, there's competition, and then there's people are having, both Rachel and Leah are having a hard time giving birth at different points. They compete for the love of their husband. Competition breeds a blessing sometimes because they both get pregnant and have their children. And then finally, Joseph is born. And very, very interestingly, maybe we'll talk about it next week, when Rachel names him Joseph, she says, God will give me yet another son. And that's going to be Benjamin, but that is his name. Oh, and my good friend Ari Silverman, he's got a son that has that name Yosef in English, Increase, right? Increase, and that is, like Increase Mather type thing. Increase means more. God will give us more. But in any case, Jacob then goes on to try to make his wealth by using the kind of science. And here we come into animal husbandry, which is what one of the blessings here. And he knows how to get his flock to be the speckled flock. He set up these rods of hazel and chestnut. He peeled white streaks in them, laying bare the white of the rods. He set up the rods which he peeled in the runnels and the water receptacles in which the flocks came to drink. And then they became stimulated when they came to drink. And then basically, whenever it was mating time for the stronger of the flocks, Jacob would place the rods in the runnels. And the bottom line is the man became exceedingly prosperous and attained flocks, maidservants and servants, camels and donkeys. He became rich. And then Laban started becoming jealous, and he realizes that something is not going right. And I'm getting to the point that I wanted to get to, which is that he calls out his wives to the field, away from Laban, away from Laban. And he says to his wives, you know that I've worked hard for your father. And then he says, basically says, I think it's time for us to go. And he tells about this dream that God revealed to him how to increase his blessing, how to do the animal husbandry and be blessed through it. But then there's one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible, and that says a lot for me anyway. It's definitely in my top five Bible verses. This is, and I want you guys, so all, whoever's not living in the land of Israel, I want you to like emblazon this somehow into your hearts or put it physically somewhere in your house. This is chapter 31, verse 13. He's telling his wives, just a few verses before that, he says, an angel of God came to me in the dream, and he says, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, raise your eyes, if you please, and see that all the he-goats mounting the flocks are ringed, speckled, and checkered, for I've seen all that Laban is doing to you. Meaning to say, I'm giving you the secret about how to make success for yourself, prosperity for yourself. But now, verse 13, Anochi Ha'el Beit El. I am the God of Beit El. Listen to this carefully. God says, I'm associating myself with the name of a place. I am the God of Beit El, Anochi Ha'el Beit El. I am the God of the house of God. Asher Mashachta Sham Atzeva. There you anointed a pillar. Asher Nadarta Li Sham Neder. There you made an oath to me. Ata, now, kum, get up. Tzemin Haaretz Hazot, leave this land. Veshuv El Eretz Moladetecha, and return to the land of your birth. That's what God tells him in a dream. I am the God of Beit El. We had a contract. Now this part of the story is over. I want you to go back to the land. And the wives, say to him, of course, if God has spoken to you this way, it's time to go. And we are strangers in the house of Lavan, and so we're ready to go. But God revealed to him in the dream, it's time to go. Make your welfare out of outside of the land of Israel. Now it's time to come home. And he associated himself, and he says, I want you to come back and fulfill the other part of the contract. That's an interesting thing, by the way. God says to him, you made me an oath. You made me an oath there. Remember that? I want that oath. I yearn for that oath. That's what the rabbis say, the sages say, that God yearns for a place in this lower worlds. That's what he says. I want you to fulfill that oath. I want you to fulfill that oath. And I'm going to protect you to help you fulfill that oath, but you fulfill that oath. There's more to talk about, of course, this Torah portion, which is just so fabulous. But I do want to finish off with saying that we are, there's three things that we have to know. First thing is that we're in the month of Chanukah, the month of lighting it up. And it's time to get in gear ready for Chanukah and to immerse ourselves in this like light that we want to bring into this world. That's number one. Number two is that it's the month of December on the secular year, which means it's the end of the fiscal year, which means also that if you have the interest in giving donations, this is the best time of the year, write-offs, etc. And so number three is help us continue to try to bring light into this world through this show and through our other works, many of our works, some of which are known and some of which are secret. Please help us continue to do our holy work. I'd like to ask you to go to yishaifleisher.com and to donate, especially maybe sign up for giving $18 a month. $18 a month is an easy way, and you'll feel good about it when you see it coming off your credit card bill. You'll be like, I'm helping the folks in Israel. I'm helping Yishai Fleischer and Kuma and Malka and Chevron and Jerusalem, and I'm helping that be built and fought for, and I'm helping this broadcast, which maybe is important to me. I hope it's important to you. And that's an easy way to do it. Of course, if you could do more, but I'm asking folks to help the Chanukah light with the Chanukah gelt, and the December gelt as well, you know, season's greetings and all that, taxpayers greetings and all that. So $18 a month is what I'm asking from you, to give a little bit, just like Jacob said, I'll tithe to you everything, a little bit of your tithe to our efforts will really help us out. You know that we are, you know this, I don't have to say this, you know that we're not about the money. That's just not what we're about. We are about something very different. But as we learned, you need the rabbi, you need the building, and you need the budget. So a little bit of your blessings, and that's really what it is. I'm asking for your blessings a little bit. That's basically it. When I see a donation come in, it just makes me feel like you've blessed our efforts here. And not only are you blessed it, but you're really part of it. That's the real truth. You're not really, it's not that you're even giving, empowering us. It's more like you're the power and you're sending us your, you know, your will, your blessings. And we're together. We're doing something that lights up the world. I really hope so. In any case, I want to thank the Land of Israel Network. I want to thank the amazing Jewish community of Hebron, which is just such a blessing to be part of. It is the kind of when Jerusalem is totally lit up, Hebron's going to be lit up next. That's also a place where it says, you know, that you can only start the temple work when you see the dawn over Hebron, when you see it lit up. We're trying to light that up as well. We're trying to make it beautiful. We're going to make a campaign to light up the Marat HaMachpelah, the Tomb of the Patriarchs and Matriarchs, the Mothers and the Fathers. That's part of what we do. I also can't tell you enough what a pleasure it is to see when I see people wearing the tchelet. I just love it. I comment to people. I'm like, you are wearing awesome tchelet, loud and proud. You are making me proud. I just said that, you know, two times yesterday. Actually, I said it to one guy, and I thought it about another guy, but I couldn't speak to him because there was no time. But like, when I see somebody wearing tchelet, it's awesome. T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T, tchelet.com. That would be awesome if you visited that. One of our sponsors, the Hebron Fund, H-E-B-R-O-N, hebronfund.org. Come on the trip. Forget donations. Or, you know what? Give donations, but come on the trip. See it for yourself. Be part of something incredible. And God, please help us to beautify the place. Our good friends, our J-Brick friends who make great Lego sets. There's great stuff for Hanukkah as well. Let's get fired up about Hanukkah. I'm getting fired up about Hanukkah. And remember what I said about also getting fired up about December, the end of the tax year. A little bit of your blessings will go a long way. And thank you, of course, to the Land of Israel Network, to Ari and Jeremy, those amazing leaders who are doing such they're bringing light into this world. Thank you so much for all that you do. Folks, just lots of blessings to you wherever you are. Send me a hashtag of blessings, of Hanukkah light. You know what? Hashtag light. Hashtag light. That's all I want. Hashtag a little. That's all I'm asking you. Fire off hashtag light. I'll see that in my inbox. I'll be like, ooh, that gives me strength. And I got some great emails the other day. I was firing back some emails. Thank you so much. Please write to me at yishai@thelandofisrael.com. It really, a little email from you is worth so much to me. Okay. So your second of just being like, you know, let me just fire off from my phone right now. Just hashtag light. That's all I want to hear from you. That's it. And that'll give me all the joy in the world. If you want to add more, great, but like, that's all I need. So hashtag light and yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Check out my website, yishaifleisher.com, and all the good work that we do. Malka is firing it up on Twitter, so follow her. I think it's Malka Fleisher or Malka F, whatever. Just type in Malka Fleisher on Twitter. You'll find her. She's awesome. She's awesome. She's ripping it. She's really lighting up the storm on Twitter. And just stay connected. There's so, so many ways. We hope to see you here in the Land of Israel so soon. God bless you. More great stuff is on the way. Stay tuned. Stay strong. Stay connected. Shalom and blessings from the Land of Israel.
If you want to improve relations between Israel and American Jews, one of the things that you should do is encourage people to listen to the Land of Israel Network. Listen to Eve Harrow, and listen to Yishai Fleisher, and listen to Ari and Jeremy, and Shlomo Katz, and listen to Mike Foyer, and listen to Josh Haston, because the Land of Israel Network has a mission, and that's to spread love between Israel and American Jews. There's so much to love about Israel. There's so much to love about Israelis. And I think the Land of Israel Network is part of the solution. You are all part of the solution.
You're listening to the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com, broadcasting the truth and beauty of Israel to the world.